we are holding on Kofiuma Lemon Olive, the fourth line of the widest lines, Lemmingen's Cool Set. Now, Simon aus der Batem Leuchte Urne, this is, as often as the case, Simon for three catchwords for the line begins Kofi. Cool Simon aus der Batem Leuchte Urne. We're going to have three teachings of Rav Chista Omer of Yomir Ba'aba. The first one is on a pasuk that begins with the word aus der. The second one actually is a kita, it's a batem, apparently is a typo for kita, it's or some such thing. And the last one is a drasha on the pasuk Leuchte Urne. So, number one, Amar of Chista, Amar of Yirmiyah Ba'aba, my dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in the Pasuk in Mishlei as follows. Al-Sdei ish otel lavar, I passed by the field of a lazy person, Val-Kerem Adam chasar leib, by the vineyard of a person who's lacking in heart, meaning in other words, in sense. V'hine ola kule kimshonim, and behold, the whole thing, the whole field, the whole vineyard, was all overgrown with kimshonim, which is the type of weeds or thorns or whatever. Kasupon of charulim, its entire surface was covered with charulim, some other kind of thorns or weeds or whatever, yeah. The gedir avon of neherosa, and its stone fence was torn down, was broken down. So what is the reference of the... Yes, right here. So what is the reference? So the Gemara is going to explain that this is referring to the progression, downward spiral that happened during the reigns of the last few kings of Yehuda.
How's it connected to the previous?
Because before we were talking about Menashe, and that brought us to some of the other wicked kings of Yehuda, such as Ahaz. So now we're going to talk about how, beginning from Ahaz, there began this downward spiral that ended up in the Churban. So Al-Sdeish, Al-Sdeish, Ahaz. When it says, I passed by the field of a lazy person, that refers to Ahaz. He's called otzel, he's called lazy in the sense, the Gemara is going to tell us on other days, he closed up the Bate Medrash, forcibly closed up the Bate Medrash, and was mevatel the Avoida. So in that sense, he can be considered lazy in the sense, like he was telling the people, be lazy, don't bother learning Torah, don't bother doing the Avoida. Valkerim Adam Chasale, when it continues by the vineyard of a person lacking in sense, Zemanasha. This refers to Manasha, who went beyond what Ahaz did, as the Gemara is going to say in Amud Beis, that Manasha went even further. He cut out the names of Hashem from the Torah and he tore down the Mizbeach. So therefore, in that case, the Yad Ramah says he's called Adam Chasale. He's called a person with no sense. In the meaning, like, what did he think he was going to accomplish by that? What did he think? When he tears out the names of Hashem from the Torah, that's going to mean that now the Torah is different. It's nonsensical for him to do that. V'hine ola kula kimshonim. When the Pasuk continues now, the entire field was overgrown with kimshonim. That Amon, this refers to Amon, the son of Menashe, who exceeded, who went even further than Menashe in his rishus, as we'll learn on Amud Beis. Again, there was a progression over here. Each one was worse than the previous one.
Yeah, they'll do each other.
He talks about the other.
We didn't really get into, no. Well, we said that Ahaz, in the end, his son Chizkiyahu dragged his bones around on, rather than burying them in an honorable way in order to give him a certain kafara. We'll talk about later on Kuf Dalet. We'll talk about Ahaz had his good points also. But right now we're dealing with the negativity, with the Avodah Zarah and the other troubles that they brought in. A cost upon of Harulim Zehiyakim. When the Pasuk says the whole field was overgrown with Harulim, this refers to Yahyakim, who the Gemara is going to say on Amud Beis, who said he covered his face from the light of Hashem. We're going to learn on Amud Beis that Yahyakim was the ultimate chutzpah yak against Hashem. He says, like, we don't even need Hashem's light on our faces. We have our own light. We have our own sources of energy. So therefore, cost upon of Harulim. So therefore, like, his face is covered.
It's not only about Hazar. It's also about
denying Hashem, indeed.
And indeed. Why?
Because people have a Yetzirah. And that's how it is. Okay. Like Aaron said, each one felt they had to outdo the previous one, I guess. The Gedder Abonim. Okay, I don't know. The Gedder Abonim, Neherosa, and when the Pasuk finishes off, the stone fence is broken down. Zetzid Kiyahu, Shenefra, Basim Ekdesh Biyamov. This refers to the final thing, Zetzid Kiyahu, who, as we learned yesterday, Kukri Mohammed Aleph. He himself was Taket Tzaddik, but he didn't give Musr, he didn't reprove the people and then get them to stop. And that was the end of it, and the stone fence, the Basim Ekdesh, was broken down and destroyed. So that's the topic.
So it's not enough to be a tzaddik.
The point is you have to give teichah. So yeah. The point being, therefore, so the pasuk is describing this downward progression that was going during those reigns.
What happened to Noach generation?
Yeah. Indeed. The Amr of Chista, Amr of Yirmiyah Ba'aba, Arba Kittis and Makablos Pei Shechina. There are four groups of people who are not going to receive the presence of the Shekhinah. Meaning, in other words, even if they otherwise have Torah, Ma'aseh Tovim, even if other than that they have mitzvahs, that would make them worthy of seeing Pnei Shekhinah, but these four things take them out. Kat Leitzim, Kat Shakronim, Kat Chanefim, and Kat Nesapri Lashon Hara. The group of Leitzim, of mockers, each one is bad in its own way. Okay, I don't know. Leitzim are people who make fun.
Going from least to worst.
Maybe. Okay.
No, I don't know.
Okay. Whatever. Anyway, I don't know. Leitzim then are people who make fun.
We had a whole discussion the other day about
Avram Moshe. Can we continue? We don't know. I don't know. The Gemara is not necessarily saying which one is worse. The point is they're all in Makabos Mishkin. Kat Leitzim. So Leitzim are people who make fun of things, who don't take anything in Yiddishkeit seriously or whatever. Kat Shakronim, liars. Chanefim means people who chanfe, people who flatter Rishayim. And Kat Mesapri Lashon Hara, and the group of people who speak Lashon Hara. Where do we see each of those four is excluded from being Makabal Pnei Shekhinah? Kat Leitzim Dichtiv Moshach Yadar Es Leitzim, because you have a pasuk that says he removed his hand from being with the Leitzim, so the Eibishter like doesn't want to be close with the Leitzim, Kat Shakramim Dichtiv Jevishkorim Layukin Lenegadeina, as the pasuk says in Tilim, somebody who speaks falsehood will not stand before my eyes.
We saw that with...
we said that yesterday as far as Nova, it's right, but yeah, exactly. Chanefim, dechtiv kilo lefon of chanef yover. You have a pasuk in Iyov that says no chanef, no flatterer will come before him, before the Eibishter. A chanef is, there's actually two different meanings of the word chanef. One aspect of it is that a person flatters Rishayim. That's when the Gemara usually uses the word chanufa, that's what it means. Like a person sees a rasha, a person sees somebody doing averus, and he says, what you're doing is fine, what you're doing is a good thing, it's okay, there's nothing wrong with what you're doing. That sort of thing. Giving them approval, basically. The other idea of chanefim, sometimes it means a hypocrite, somebody who acts, ech of the pev, ech of the lev, a person who acts a certain way, but chatzonius, but the pnimius, he's corrupt. Usually, though, the Gemara's meaning of chanufa is the first one, that was
so flattering.
Flattering
of Russia.
Yeah. That's what it means. In other words, like you say to him, it's okay, what you're doing is good. For example, you have the famous Gemara in Soita over there when Agrippa Samalach is reading from the Torah by Hakil, and he gets to the pasuk that you're not allowed to appoint a king that's not Ochicha, and he starts crying, and everybody else calls out, it's okay, Ochinu Asa, that was wrong, that was an example of Hanufa, because the fact of the matter is he was Kossel, because he descended from Avodim, with his mother may have been a Giyotis or whatever, so that the Gemara gives that as an example of Hanufa. And Kat Masakri Lashon Hara Dichtiv Ki Loi Keo Chofet Resha Ata. The pasuk says in Tilim, you Hashem do not desire evil. Lo Yigur Chara, evil will not dwell with you. Which means Tzadik Ata, which means you Hashem are a Tzadik. Therefore, Lo Yivim Gur Chara. Therefore, evil will not abide, will not dwell with you. Now, how do we know the evil we're talking about over here is Lashon Hara? So Rashi explains, because the following psukim, this is in Kapitel Hay of Tilim, the following psukim, the previous pasuk. A couple of psukim later, it mentions Dovrei Kozov, people who speak falsehood, which, okay, the Marashal says, okay, that's falsehood, that's not Lashon Hara. But later on in the capital, you have Kirbam Havoyt, they're inside of them is destruction, Kevapasuach Gironim, their mouth is like an open grave, like a person can easily get killed by their Lashon Hara. So therefore, we see it's talking about Bali Lashon Hara. Kirbam Havos. Inside, their inside is destructive. What they have, their ideas they have inside them are destructive. And their mouth is like an open grave in the sense a person can easily get caught up in their Lashon Hara and end up getting killed.
Havos is spelled?
Havos. Hey, vav, vav, suck. It means destruction. Okay. There is, by the way, there's a verse from the Megala Amukas that says there's a concept in Kedusha, there's a concept of Chashmal. Yechezkel mentions it in the Ma'aseh Merkava and in the first paragraph of Yechezkel that we read on the first day of Shavuot. There's Chashmal over there, which the Gemara discusses in Chagiga what it is exactly, but anyway. So connected that, you have everything, Zelo, Masel, Selakim. So you have a Chashmal and Klippa. That's these four. Chanefim. Misakre Shakronim, Misakre Lashon Hara, and Leitzim. They also spell out Chashmal.
Chashmal is like Kether, the Chash is the Kether,
Malin. That why Dafka of Chashmal? I guess because the idea is Chashmal is surrounding a Lakos over there, and it's described over there as from there come the Chayis HaKodesh, the Jumus HaLakise is surrounded by Chashmal. So here, corresponding to that, these are the ones that are not Makabal Pnei Shekhinah.
And it's the modern Hebrew word for electricity.
It is the modern Hebrew word for electricity.
Nothing to
it. Yeah, okay. onward. And then the third thing that the name of Rabbi Yirmiyahu Abba, and the name of Rabbi Yirmiyahu Abba, my dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in the pasuk, like the unay lecha ra, evil will not come, will not meet up with you. The nega la yikra ba'alecha, and no nega, no plague will come close to your tent. So lo to unay lecha ra means shala yushlat behen yetzahara. It means that the bracha is that the yetzahara shouldn't control you. The Yetzihara, the Ra, should not encounter you. It means when you come home from a trip, the bracha is that you won't find your wife a sopik nida. Ohal, oihal means a wife. Ain't all the other ishna. Like we had, ain't all the other
ishna.
I will say in a second. Yeah. We'll talk about it in a second. But so the point is, so okay, Rashi says, Mela, if the guy finds his wife bade nida, okay, then there's no choice. Sophic nida that he starts having is yetzahara may get the better of him. It's only a sophic after all. So that's one idea. Elsewhere, Rashi talks about, even we're talking about sophic, the kol shekin badei, Rashi says, Bava Matia, where the same Gemara is brought. There's other explanations, the Maharsha, because that Rashi is, you won't even find even a sophic, how much more so you won't find her a badei, she'll be available. Okay, Maharsha and Maharal talk about in different oisias the idea that Mela, if she's Vadai Nida, okay, it's Dauka Shaloyla, it's a Teva, that a woman is Nida a certain times of the month. But Sophic Nida must be because you yourself haven't been acting correctly. And therefore now you find her Sophic Nida. So therefore the Bracha, if you don't find her Sophic Nida, amounts to, therefore, that you yourself, shows that you yourself are on the right
when
path.
When you don't act correctly with her, she becomes...
Then you start having spacus, which interferes with your marital life, yeah.
Suffolk is from a mullet.
Suffolk is from a mullet in general. This is also true, yeah.
Okay.
All right. They say, Veni Hayoda also says, the vote is, why is that called Nega? Nega, Moloshin Negia. Because when she's a Suffolk Nidhi, you can't touch her. Yeah. Okay. Another explanation, means you shouldn't be frightened by bad dreams or bad thoughts when you go to bed. And when it says a nega shouldn't come close to your tent, you should not have a son or Talmud who burns their food in public, which is a metaphorical way of saying that you have a person has a son or a Talmud who goes off the derech in a very public way, and therefore it causes embarrassment to their father or to their Rebbe, to their parents or to their Rebbe, that they did that. In uncensored Gemara, it gives an example, to bring Yeshua Hanut, which you can easily see why that's in our Gemara. What?
It doesn't match
the
Rebbe the right way.
No, means that, in other words, the Talmud learned from the Rebbe, for example, and now he goes publicly off the derech to go in Yeshua Nutri and becomes a public min akakoris, moiser, whatever he did exactly, mason, matiach, or whatever, and therefore it causes embarrassment to his Rebbe.
But yes, he didn't have his father. The Rebbe.
Yeah, okay, whatever. No, he had a father. He had a biological father.
What's
the other idea? Makdiach tavshila b'rabim is somebody who goes publicly off the derech in a way that embarrasses, in a way that causes...
As a consequence of what?
As a consequence of that he goes off the derech. A person has the Yetzirah. The bracha is to the father or to the Rebbe that you shouldn't have a son of a Talmud like that. Mela, okay, they do have Eretz in secret. Okay, it doesn't, but that it should be in public. Makdiach tavshila b'rabim, that's the end. Okay. Adkan berchei aviv. Up until this point in the capital is his father benching him. Who is the father and who is the him? Rashi says David benching Shlomo. Why is that? Rashi says, first of all, because what kind of brachos would a father typically give his son? These kinds of things. Sopik nida, yetzahara, hurim roim, etc. A woman's kind of brachos are different. They're the next series in the psukim. There are some other mefarshim who say, based on a medrash in Bereshis Rabbah, that actually the father and the son that we're talking about over here, and then the mother and the son are talking about Yitzchak and Rivka to Yaakov before he left to go to Haran. Okay, so ad kan berchayoviv, mikan va'elach berachatayim. The next part of the capital is his mother giving him brachas. Ki malachim yitzavalach, he should command his malachim about you, b'shmorcha b'chol derachecha, to protect you on all your ways. Al kapayim yisuncha v'gomer, they should carry you on their hands. Al shachal v'peth and tidrech v'gomer, you'll be able to step safely over the lion and the snake. Those are the kind of brachas that a mother gives.
Spiritual.
Not more spiritual, but no, actually more down to earth kind of in a way. Yeah. But then you have, up until this point, those couple of psukim are his mother benching him. The rest of the capital is the Eidish benching him. And as the pasuk continues, And you see, by the way, because you see it switches from second to third person, also from second to first person. You have he, Hashem, should send his malachim. The last couple of psukim, on the other hand, are in first person. Because he desired me, meaning that the Eved are talking. Therefore, I save him. I will make him great. Because he knows my name. Yikreini, he will call me the Eneu, and I will answer him. I am with him in Tzaras. I'll rescue him and I'll honor him. I'll satisfy him with long life. And I'll show him my saving. These are all brachas that the Eved is giving Shloimeh HaMelech. Now, after his father's brachas and after his mother's brachas. Rashi also points out, by the way, each of these paragraphs in the kapitel over there also starts with ki. You start off with, we said, then you have ki malacha mitzavalach. So it implies that's like a new speaker now.
Along
with the above, ki malacha mitzavalach. And then the next part is also ki v'chosha ramatev. So therefore, it implies that there's a change of speaker each time. What does it mean? A pasuk in Iyov that says the light has been withheld. Their light has been withheld from Rishoyim. Uzroya Roma Tishaver, and the mighty arm of the Rishoyim will be broken. The question is, why is it the ayin in the word Rishoyim in that pasuk is hung? So you have four letters in Tanakh that are not written in the same line as the rest of the letters. They're written a little bit above. One of them is in Tilim, and in Kapitel Pei, you have Semena Chazir Miyar. So the standard Tilim, the Oyel Yisrael Tilim, actually has the ayin small over there. It's not so much meant to be small as it's supposed to be higher up than the other letters. Mem Yud, ayin, a normal size ayin, but higher in the line than normal, Rish.
So there's
Rashis about that. What? There's only four times in Tanakh. We have drashas about each one, but here we're focusing on one. There's actually two of them, and then two psukim apart. In Iyov, we're focusing on one of them. Yeah, so you have that one in Tilim. Yeah, it's a known thing. It's brought in Svarim that there's four of them. There's the one in Tilim. There's one in Shoftim, Moshe, Menashe. We discussed it in Rav Basra. And then we have twice in Iyov, two psukim apart. You have Rishoyim, where the ayin of Rishoyim is tluya. It's hanging. It's suspended higher in the line. Why? It represents the idea. Kivin shenas adam rosh milamata, nasa rosh milamayla. It represents the idea. So you have, because the ayin is hanging over there, it's as if it wasn't there. It's as if you could read the word roshin, which means poor. So therefore, what it represents the idea, if a person is poor down below, meaning that he has enemies, and ein ruach habrias nechaymenu, then nasa rosh milamayla, then you know that he's hated milamayla as well. So therefore, you have roshim rishoyim. Therefore, that's the connection over here. If he's a rosh, if he's bereft of friends down here, it means that he must, that the Eved Tzedakah considers him a rosha as well. One second. The question is v'loy nichtav eklal. In that case, don't write the ayin at all. Just say roshim. The answer is Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. Chad Amar Bnei Kvodesh of David. One says it's because of the honor of David, because it would imply that David had a lot of enemies in his lifetime. In that case, falsely imply that David is going to be considered a Rosh. No, he's not Rosh Milamayla. His enemies had no reason, were hating him sinas chinah. So we're not talking about that. The other says because of the kavod of Nechemya ben Chachalya, who also, this is at the beginning of the second Mishnah, he also had many enemies among the goyim who wanted to kill him, and he had enemies among the Jewish people as well because he was trying to strengthen Torah and mitzvahs over there and getting rid of intermarriages and whatever. So the point is, therefore, so the pasuk doesn't want to say outright that if somebody is Rosh Milamata, he's automatically Rosh Milamayla, because that would falsely imply that that's the case with David and with Nechemya. Therefore, put in the ayin over there to say that first the guy has to be a Rosha, has to be a Rosha in order for that to be the case, which isn't true of David and isn't true of Nechemya.
So why is it up
there? So therefore, it's up there, but to represent the idea that you can also read the pasuk without it, Roshim, that if a person is Rosh Milamayla, there's a double Rosh. If a person is Rosh Milamayla, Milamata, down here, generally speaking, he's Rosh Milamayla as well. It doesn't do the opposite. If a person is Ein Ruach HaBriyas Nechaymenu, usually it means Ein Ruach HaMakim Nechaymenu. Again, it's not a hard and fast rule, therefore it left in the eye. The Yad Ramah has a whole different explanation, which a couple of other Rishonim also seem to have, this Gira says as well. The word is not Rosh Milamata as in poor, but Rosh Milamata. When a person becomes a leader down here, then it means he tends to become a Rosha because, as the famous expression goes, power corrupts. So then, but on the other hand, the exception, the David and Nehemia. So the Yad Ramah asks, in that case, you have a lot of exceptions. What about Moshe? What about Yeshua? What about Shmuel? What about most of the kings of Yehuda? He says we're talking about though not when the person was appointed because the whole nation needs his Torah. For example, Moshe and Yeshua and Shmuel. And not when he inherited his position from his ancestors, like the later kings of Yehuda, like Shlomo and the kings after him. We're talking about a person who, if not specifically, they didn't need him particularly because he's the greatest Talmud Chacham or whatever alive. David was a great Talmud Chacham, but there were other ones in his time. Nehemiah, the same thing.
Not like him.
No, actually, the Gemara mentions in Gittin that you have the famous thing, that you have, there wasn't Toto Gdullah of Makam Echad from Moshe until Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. And the question is, what about David? And the answer is that in David's times, you also had, who is it? I think Mephibosheth. You had was greater than, or Shimi ben Gero, whoever it was exactly, I don't remember, who was at least equal to him in Torah.
That was in Bavavasta?
No, it may have been Bavavasta as well. It was primarily in Gittin. But, anyway.
It was in Gittin then, or was it in Bavavasta?
Was it in Bavavasta? I don't remember.
Because
okay.
We just did it.
Okay. Anyway. So therefore... The point is, therefore, according to the Yad Ramah's explanation, so if you're talking about a person who wasn't appointed because he's the greatest in the generation, and it's not that he inherited it from his parents, that's when we're saying that it tends to be that being appointed to such a thing tends to make him, tends to inflate his gaiva. On the other hand, we're saying it's not always the case because you have David and you have Nehemiah where that wasn't the case.
So
therefore, again, it left in the eye.
Are
they among the exceptions? And therefore, for their covered, therefore the ayin was left in the pocket to imply that it doesn't. It's not across the board.
It's likely that it's not. They didn't come from Yerusha.
David didn't come from Yerusha. His father wasn't king. Menashe, the king that we're talking about before, used to learn 55 different approaches in Teras Koyanim, meaning in Sefer Vayikra. Keneged Shnei Malchusei, corresponding to the years of his reign. So Rashi says it means every year of his reign, he would come up with new chidushim in Vayikra. And the reason why we mention Vayikra particularly is because Vayikra is a particularly complex chumash. There's a lot of complex dinim in there.
Karbonas,
the Tumah Vatara, etc. Yeah. So Rashi says that every year of his reign, he would come up with new chidushim in it. The Yad Ramah says, what are you talking about? The years when he was worshipping up at Azara and doing all kinds of other Averas, he was being mechadish chidushim in Torah Skarinim. He says, no, what it means is when he was younger, he was mechadish 55 ways, and because of that, the Eberstedt granted him 55 years of kingship. Their taka are maskilim, who sat and learned Torah while they're doing Averas. This is true, so I guess Rashi could learn that it was like that, yeah. Achav Shmoinim B'chamisha, Achav 200 years earlier was even more knowledgeable. He knew 85 different ways in Teres Koinim. Yeravam Meo Shlosha and Yeravam knew 103. So the 85 from Achav, there's a couple of different various Achronim give different Ramazim what 85 represents. That represents the word peh, or it represents it's one less than the name of Elikim. There's different explanations. As far as the 103 of Yeravam,
it's the block that we're on.
It is indeed the block we're on. Kuf Gimel, yeah. I've talked about this. But so the 103 of Yeravam, it's brought from Kitzvei Arizal and then various other places that it's corresponding to the Gematria of Egel, as in the Egel that Yeravam made. The Rebbe actually once talked about it in a Sicha and of Parshas Kisisa, talking about the idea that why is the Chet HaEgel in Parshas Kisisa, the parasha that's talking about lifting up the Jewish people of all things, because the underlying idea, the underlying shorish of the Egel was a good one, 103 explanations in Torah. Just in this case, by Yeravam, it was corrupted, just like it was by the Jewish people, with the Egel, with the Egel
Azar.
The fact that you have 103 approaches to Torah is a good thing, but not the way that he did it. Yeah. Tanya, how you're a mayor, Omer. Okay, so now for the moment we're done with the three malachim. For the moment we're done with the three malachim that it said in the Mishnah that lost their place in Olam Haba, Achav, Menashe, and Yeravam. We've gone through all of them.
Don't
now,
call me your friends.
We're gonna get back to them. But first, are there any others? Tanya, how you're a mayor. Avshalom ain't lechel Olam Haba. We learned in a Braita that a mayor said Avshalom doesn't have a place in Olam Haba. Shenema, as opposed to this, by Yakuas Avshalom, by Yimisuhu, it says they struck Avshalom and killed him. He was rebelling against David, and yeah, he was hanging from a tree over there, yeah. By Yakub, by Olam Hazeh, by Yimisuhu, by Olam Abba. The implication is they struck him in Olam Hazeh, and they killed him in the sense that he didn't go into Olam Abba either. They physically killed him. But Maharshal says the point why the Gemara wants to darshan it is because right after that, the Pasuk says they took his body and buried it. So obviously, if they buried it, he's dead. The Pasuk doesn't need to mention that they killed him. Why should it mention they killed him? It must be for the Durasha. On the other hand, though, I mean, here... That's what we're saying. When you have a double expression like that, it means But with that said, though, there's a Gemara in Sota. But on the other hand, there was a Gemara in Sota that disagrees with that, apparently, because it says over there that, so it says in there that in the Pesukim over there, after David gets the news that Avshalom has been killed, which he didn't want, by the way, he wanted that they should keep Avshalom alive. He spoke to his son. But afterwards, David is in grief and he's crying out, B'ni Avshalom, B'ni, B'ni Avshalom. 8 times he cries out the word B'ni. So what do the 8 times represent? So Gemara and Sota explain. 7 times he schlepped him out of the Shiva Madura Gehenim, 7 levels of Gehenim. The 8th one, the Gemara brings the Machlokas over there. Either it's that he brought his head and body back together, because his head had been chopped off, or that he brought him into Olam Haba. So according to that second explanation, then that disagrees with our Gemara. They lost his place in Olam Haba. David got it back. If David's davening for it, it happened. So evidently, then Rameo over here just agrees with that. Maybe he holds like the first opinion over there that old David was able to accomplish. With the 8th B'ni, it's fine. His body is intact again, but not that he's back in Olam Haba. Okay. He rebelled against his father, but in particular also there's the whole thing with the 10th Elijah that we talked about. The point is that according to the mayor, maybe even David wasn't able to accomplish to get him into Olam Haba. According to the mayor, fine, he was able to accomplish to schlep him out of Gehenim and to get his head back together with his body, but not on Abba. Okay. We'll talk about later on Kuf Dalad, we're going to talk about the whole question of can a father's chutzim save his son? We'll get back to this matter of David and Avshalom then. Okay. Can you? Rav Shimon Allah Zalimim Shumram Meir. Now, so we've talked about the Menashe, who was the major king, the Rasha among the kings of Yehuda. We'll talk about Yehoyakim later. We'll talk about Amon and Yehoyakim later. The question is, what about the various other kings that it says on them that they did evil? What about the various Malchei Yisrael that they says that says that did evil? Can you Rav Shimon Alazo Emim Shuma Meir Achaz VaAchazia V'chol Malchei Yisrael Shekatzu Ben Vayasa Rabbein Hashem? All the kings of Yisrael and Yehuda, I guess, that it says on them Vayasa Rabbein Hashem, other than the ones mentioned in our Mishnah. They won't come alive again by Tchias HaMesim, but they also don't get judged in Gehenna.
Where do they go?
So the Adrama says they're just kind of floating around with nothing to do.
That's harder than
maybe in a certain sense. Ben Yoyada says the vote is it means that they get Nisgalgal. It means they get Nisgalgal throughout the generations. Eventually each one of them gets Okay, but it's a different kind of thing. They go into a Gilgal. Their Gilgal has a chance to make up for what they did wrong. And once they once they once whatever they did wrong is nisak, and then fine, they can go into Gan Eden. The Yad Ramah, by the way, also adds. So why don't we say Taka? They just lost their place in Olam Haba, finished. Why are we saying Lochayin Veloni Donin? The reason is because after all, these kings did do some good. They fought wars on behalf of the Jewish people when the Jewish people were in sire. They shared with it. Therefore, you can't just write them off completely. Now, getting back to Menashe, the pasuk says the gam dam naki shofach Menashe harimoy. The pasuk says that Menashe also spilled much innocent blood. Levad mechatos hashehechti es Yehuda lasta rabbi in Hashem. Besides, for his averus that he caused the Yehuda to sin, to do evil in the eyes of Hashem by worshiping Avodah Zarah and doing other averus. So the question is, what's this dam naki shofach Menashe harimoy? What are we specifically talking about that Menashe did as far as filling Yerushalayim with blood from one end to the other? Until he filled Yerushalayim from one end to the other. What does that mean? So here in Babel they explain Jehorah Yeshaya. That is referring to the fact that Menashe killed Yeshaya. A tzaddik like Yeshaya is to neged the whole Jewish people. So therefore, you have the famous story in Yevamos over there that he's challenging him that different things in Yunivor seem to contradict the Torah. Therefore, you should be chayiv misa. So Yeshaya goes and then says a shame of Hashem and gets himself hidden inside a tree. Menashe has his soldiers go and start sawing open the tree, and when the saw reached Yeshaya's mouth, he died. So that's a pelopeh, by the way. That's the word is Marshot. The Marshot says that Yeshaya is called pelopeh. He spoke to the Eibishter with the Eibishter spoke to him with his mouth, Kavyachol, and Menashe was killed through his mouth.
So therefore, that's pelopeh. Story. Yeah. That was sad.
Yeah. So that's one explanation.
How do you know it was in the tree?
You figured. I think the Gemara says over there. I think because it was a tzitzit. One of Yeshaya's tzitzits was sticking out of the tree. Yeah.
He killed his grandfather.
Indeed, yes. Yeshaya was his grandfather because you have the famous story over there when Chizkiyo didn't want to get married, and then Yeshaya tells him, in that case, you're going to lose your place in the Mazer and the Mabah. Then he says, so let me marry your daughter, and that way at least we have a chance. He knew that Yeshaya was his grandfather, yeah. He wanted, his mother's father, yeah. Okay. So that's one explanation. V'chad Omar, Amri, in Eretz Yisrael, they explain in what way, what are all these murders that we're talking about that Menashe did? Also, it means he made a statue that was so heavy that it took 1,000 people to carry it. And every day he killed all of them. Meaning, who carried the statue? It was so heavy that it crushed them and split them open. So, Kaman Ozla Hoda.
He's a bad guy, we mean it.
Yeah. Kaman Ozla Hoda Amar Rabba Baba Chana. Which of these opinions fits with this that Rabba Baba Chana says? Shkul and the Shama Shaltatik Echad, Kenegad Kala and Kulu, the Shama to the whole world. Kaman Ozla Yeshaya Horak. That must be according to the opinion that says that he killed Yeshaya, and for that it's considered as if he filled Yerushalayim with corpses. Madishimilius Rhine Pelopet. Now, describing what Menashe did, you have two different psukim. Siv peso or siv psilim. In Melachim, when it describes that Menashe put an idol in the business, it said he put a peso. In Divrei Yomim, it says that he made psilim in the plural. So what was it? One or many? Also like parts of that. But it means he started out with an idol that had one face. All of a sudden, also like Abba parts of him. Later on, he reworked that idol and made it have four faces. This way, like whichever way the Shechina goes into the Heichel, it'll see a face of an Avodah Zarah facing it and get angry. There's also some of the Mephoshim say the vote is he wanted to, so to speak, duplicate the Chayas HaKodesh. We know from Yechezkel's description of the Merkava that the Chayas HaKodesh have faces on each side of their body, so they don't have to turn, they can walk in any direction they need to. So, Lahavdil, he made a statue to correspond to that. Okay. Now we're going to talk. We talked on Amud Aleph. We brought the drasha on the pasuk over there, of our idea about the downward spiral over there from generation to generation. Now we're going to talk about what does that actually mean? What happened from generation to generation? Achaz hamid baldia. Achaz, who was the first one to put an idol in the Beis Hamikdash, he put it in the attic of the Beis Hamikdash. Like he was too afraid to put it on the ground floor. Nobody would tolerate it. As it says, the altars that were on the roof in the upper floors of Achaz, Yoshiyahu destroyed. So we see that Achaz originally put it in the attic. Menashe hamid beheichel. Menashe, when he came along, this is two generations later, Chizkiyah was in between, he put the statue in the heichel itself. He put the statue of the Asherah, which he made in the house, which Hashem had spoken to Dov and to his son Shlomo, saying, "Babayis Azer, in this house of Yerushalayim Asher
B'chazki."
He put it in the Heichel. The very same building of which Hashem had told David and Shlomo hundreds of years earlier, in this house, the Yerushalayim Asher B'chazki Mekol Shivta Yisrael, and Yerushalayim, which is a special place that I've chosen out of all the Shvatim, Osim Es Shmi La'olam, I will place my name, my Shechina there forever. And Menashe undid that by putting the statue in the Heichel. Omen Nechnisa Leveis Kodesh HaKadoshim. Omen went even beyond that. Omen, Menashe's son, went even beyond that and put the statue in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Shenema, as you have a pasuk in Yeshaya, ki kotzer hamatza mihistoreya. He says the matza, literally a matza means like a bed or a mat or something, is too narrow to stretch out. Bahamaseicha kotzora keiskanit, and the maseicha, which means an image made out of molten metal, tzora is too narrow keiskanit for the gathering in. So what does that mean? Ma'ati kotzer hamatza mihistoreya. What does that mean that the matza, the bed, is too narrow to stretch out? The masa represents the Beis Hamikdash, like because Kabiyachol the Eved Shechina is resting there, like a human being rests in a bed. In fact, you have a pasuk in Shir Hashirim that describes that Bein Shodai Yolin, that the Eved Shekabiyachol rests between my bosoms, between the two poles of the Aron, which stuck out from the curtain of the Heichel. So So the masa is the word mehistoreia. We're dashing the word mehistoreia as made up of the word mehistorere, from being controlled by Kali. So this masa, this dwelling place of the Shekhinah, is too narrow, is too small for two reim, for two colleagues, so to speak, to rule over it together. In other words, basically, the Eibishter is saying, I can't be there together with the Avodah Zarah. If the Avodah Zarah is in, then I'm out.
That's in the Kodesh
Kedoshim. In the Kodesh Kedoshim, because that's the Masa. That is the place of the
Shekhinah. Didn't anyone that went in there die? So how do they get it in there? Like pulleys?
Maybe they bring it back pulleys, exactly, yeah.
Or maybe they went in from the roof and lowered it down.
Yes, by pulleys, yeah. Could be.
Didn't that guard that?
The guards themselves may have been corrupt as well. I don't know. Good question. I don't know. Okay. The Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah that there were 10 stages in which the Shekhinah left the Beis Hamikdash. So before we said that Menashe put the statue in the Heichel. Already at that point, then the Shekhinah was starting its withdrawal. So at that point already, there may not have been in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it might not have been at that point that if a person goes illegally into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that they're going to die. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
But that's in Madrega to be able to that a person would die at that point.
Yeah, okay, fine. My ba masecha tzora, we're going. What does the next part of the pasuk mean? The masecha, the statue, is tzora kehiskanes. Is tzora can mean too narrow, but it can also mean tzora as in a rival, like we had in Yavama. It's a tzora kehiskanes for gathering. What does that mean? Omer Shmuel ben Achmeni, Rabbi Yonason ki have a moti la haikra have a kabochi. When Rabbi Yonason, Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni's rebbe, would reach this pasuk in his learning, he would start crying. He said, look at this, the Eibishter of whom it says he gathers together the waters of the sea like columns, like pillars. So koines kiskanes from the pasuk in Yeshaya related to the word koines, teosale masecha tzara, and now a statue made out of metal is a rival to him, kavyochol. So that's why masecha tzara kiskanes, like kavyochol. Now the masecha, the statue, has become a tzara, has become a rival to kiskanes, the Eibishter who's able to gather the waters together and create dry land. Marsha also says the vort is. It's also reference to Kriyas Yamsuf. The Gemara is going to talk about later on. The Gemara is going to talk about towards the end of the Amud that during Kriyas Yamsuf, Micha passed through over there with his pestle, and still the Eibishter Kavyachol tolerated it and still did the nest of Kriyas Yamsuf. But now it's tolerated that Micha is going through over there, even though Micha was a Rasha and put up a pestle later on. And here we're saying that now a statue is being put in the Beis Hamikdash, and like the Eibishter Kavyachol has to withdraw and can, so that the Rabbi Yonason would cry about that. Okay. Another example of the progression that went between these various kings, Achaz bitul ha'avodah v'chasam ha'Torah. Achaz was mevatel the avodah in the Beis Hamikdash, and he sealed up the Torah in the sense that he closed up the Batei Medrash and ordered nobody's allowed to learn. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Tzur Te'udah, seal up the Te'udah, Te'udah Meloshin Eid, the testimony, which is the Torah that testifies about the relationship between us and the Eibishter. Chasoim Torah Belimudah, seal up the Torah among those who learn it, meaning that that's what Achaz is saying, that the Batei Medrash are officially closed. The Medrash expands on that, by the way. The Medrash says the famous thing that Achaz figured, if there's no young goats, there'll eventually be no old goats. If we close up the Chadorim, where the children learn Torah, eventually nobody will know Torah at all. Right? Yeah, like communist Russia, yeah. Nazi Germany was worse, but yeah, okay. Menashe koder asas kodes. Menashe went beyond that. So we're saying Achaz mevatel the avodah, so the mizbeach is still intact, just there's no avodah being done on it. And we're saying he closed up the Batei Medrash. Menashe went beyond that. Kodar asas kodes. He cut out the names of Hashem from the Torah. We saw the other day that Achaziah did the same thing. Vahoras as the mizbeach, and he tore down the mizbeach. Marshall points out afterwards when it says after Menashe did tshuva that we talked about yesterday, it says he built the mizbeach, implying that it must have been destroyed. Who would have destroyed it? Him.
Wait, Menashe was where?
Menashe was the king of Yehuda. He was the son of Chizkiyahu.
But he was in the north?
No, in the south.
In the south.
So his jurisdiction included the Beis Hamikdash. Yeah. Omer in Sorah for the Torah, Omer in the son of Menashe went even beyond that. He burnt the Torah. The hell of Shmomis al Gabi HaMizbeach. And he brought up Shmomis on the Mizbeach. What is Shmomis? Rashi says Shmomis means spiders. The Avodah was totally nisbatel in his time. He forcibly was revatel the Avodah totally, to the point that Mizbeach was so abandoned that spiders are spinning webs on it. Different other Rishonim talk about different other possibilities, that that a shmamis may be some kind of creature. The Yad Ramah says some kind of lizard. Some other Mepharshim say it may mean a monkey or some kind of bird or whatever. Then the point would be that that Oman deliberately takes a treifa creature and sacrifices it on the Mizbeach. Shmamis be a dime to tapis. It talks all about Siddur. Yeah, that a shmamis represents a clipper, that and nevertheless it can be in the king's palace. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Not necessarily. I mean, in the various Maimorim where it talks about this idea of Shmomis B'Yadayim V'Tapis, I haven't found any that define what it is. The idea is always, like, the Shmomis is such a smallish creature, like the king pays no attention to it, and therefore it can be hanging around in the palace without the king even paying attention. So it could be a spider, but it could also be a lizard. Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. Depends on the size of the lizard, I guess. Okay, another progression, as far as Arayas, Ochaz Hitir at the Erva. Ochaz was officially matir, that people are allowed to have relations with Arayas. Menashe Baal Achos, and Menashe went beyond that and had relations with the Bitmikdash. No, not necessarily in the Bitmikdash, but anywhere it is, it's still also. Menashe Baal Achos, and Menashe was actually Mizana with his sister. Omein Baal Imay, and Omein, as usual, went beyond and had relations with his mother. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Ki hu omoin hirbo ashra. As the Pasuk says, he omoin was greater in guilt. So what's the greater? Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Lozer. Chada mashal sarach ha-Torah. So Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Lozer disagree what that Pasuk is referring to. One says it's referring to the fact that he burnt the Torah, which is beyond what anybody had done before. V'chada mashal ba'alima. And the other one says the fact that he's in Mizana with his mother. And Omer Lo'imai, and when he does that, his mother says, Klum Yeshlacha Anam Amakam Shiyasas Imenu. Can you even have Hanah from being Mizana with the very person you came out of? Omer Lo, and he answers, Klum Ani Oise El Lachas Esperdi. You think I'm doing it for any other reason other than to anger the Ebershit? That's Omer.
So that's what he's done.
Marshall points out, that may be, the name Omer is very appropriate to him. Omer Meloshen Ein.
No,
it's spelled the same way. Omer with an Aleph. With an aleph and aim, also is spelled with an aleph. Yeah. Okay. Now, ki also Yehoyakim. Now, finally, we get to Yehoyakim. We said before that Yehoyakim went beyond all of them. So, what did he do? How much worse could he do? Omar, he says, kamay lo yadi la guzi. The previous generation, they didn't know nothing about what it means to anger the Eibishter. I know what it means. Klum onet tzrichen ela la oiroi. He says, you think we even need the Eibishter's light? Yeshlon is a hav tabayim shana mishtamshin bay. We have the hav tabayim, which is a hello. Which is a very expensive kind of gold, which we use it. Yitzalore, let the Eibishter take his light away. We don't need it. We can manage ourselves. What light? Rashi says we're talking about the sun. Let him take away the sun. We don't need it. And the Maharal says the idea is like the sun is a gashmiistic component of light that comes from it. There's also a ruchniistic component. What Yoyakim is basically saying, we don't want the Ruchniistic component. We don't want to have any relationship with the Eibishter on a Ruchniistic level. We want just Gashmius. We have the Hav Parvayim on a Gashmiistic level. We can manage ourselves. We don't need the Ruchniist at all.
Right, it's worse than the
Ivanim. So, I guess in a certain sense, I don't know. Some of them, of course, say also the verse is that the previous kings, okay, they worshipped Avodah Zarah, at least they believed in the Eibishter. We're saying Yehoyakim went beyond that. He says, we don't even need the Eibishter. And by the way, the Rambam's example, for example, I think it's in Hilchos Tshuva, when the Rambam wants to give an example of somebody who's Megala Panim HaTorah B'Kahavtia, somebody who's publicly chutzpidik against the Eibishter and the Torah, his example is Yehoyakim, as we see from our Gemara. Amru Loi, so the people told him, well, like we said before in the Gemara, that the people of Yehoyakim signs with Tzadikim. So they said, what do you mean? How do you think you can get along with the Zahav Kavayim? Well, like, Kesef Azav Shalai Hu. The gold and silver also belongs to the Eibishter. Shenem Aliyah Kesef Aliyah Azav Nur Mashem Tzvaka. So the Pasuk says, the Eibishter says, mine is the silver and mine is the gold. Amru Lahem, so Yehoyakim says, Kvar Nos Melanu. No, but he gave it all to us. Shenem Ashamayim Shamayim Lashem Va'arat Nos on the Bnei Adam. So therefore, that said, it belongs to us, and therefore we don't need other courts anymore, he's saying.
He didn't
dash it
after the
brother. Yeah, I guess not. Okay, then in that case, you got to ask the question, why is Yehoyakim not listed in our Mishnah as one of the people who lost his place in the Rabbah? Because it says in the Pasuk, So Rashi explains this is all part of the question. Mishum dichtive, is it because it says about him, is it because the Pasuk itself explicitly says that that what a rasha it was. He says the rest of the matter is about Yehoyakim and the disgusting things that he did, v'hanimtza olav, and what was found on him. What does it mean, my v'hanimtza olav? What does it mean, what was found on him? It implies like it was found on his body after he died, which Maharshal says, the vote is, because the people of his times were, relatively speaking, tzaddikim, they wouldn't have tolerated him doing this in public. So he had to do these things on his body that we're going to say in a second, in private, and they only discovered it on his body after he died. Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Lazo, again, Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Lazo disagree what exactly he did. One says that he tattooed a name of a getchke on his aver, like to symbolize, like not only the whole idea of tattooing, the idea is, the Mephoshim on the Pasuk say, that Amma mentions in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, for example, that the whole idea behind tattooing and why the Torah says it's also, it's like a person marks himself, I'm a slave to this getchke. That's the reason why the Torah outlaws tattooing. So like this, he's saying, all of me, even that part of me, is subservient to Avodah Zarah. The other opinion says that he tattooed a name of the Eivishter on that Eiver, as a bazillion for the Eivishter. Yeah. But that's the Hanimsa Olav. That's like they found it on him only after he died. So Rashi explains that all this is part of the question. Is it because the Mishnah didn't need to mention that he lost his place in the Mabla because it's so obvious from the Pasuk itself? Why not, though? Why shouldn't the Mishnah mention it? The Yad Ramah understands it a little bit differently. That the question is why he's not counted, and the reason is because okay, he did these chutzpahdikah things and all, but after all, in a certain, you know, he had a lot of chutzpah, as we said, but on the other hand, as in terms of, for example, compared to what Menashe did, in a certain sense, it wasn't as bad, like. Because we said Menashe actually brought up a desire into the Beis Mikdash, so we're not saying over here that Yehoyakim did that. We said Menashe set up. I was telling you yesterday that Menashe set up a whole party in Eretz Yisrael of people who believe in Avodah Zarah. We don't find necessarily that Yehoyakim did that. Adarabba was saying the people of the time with tzaddikim. So he himself may have been a chutzpanyak, but he didn't rise to the level of Menashe. Okay,
Apparently not.
But wait, we'll talk about it later. On Kuf Dalet, we had the story before of what happened to Yaakov's soul, so we'll get back to it. Amalei, so Rav Amori answers, the Melachim lo shamaiti, you're right, when it comes to the kings and the Mishnah, I never heard from my Rebbeim, taka why Yaakov is not listed. The Hedyotis shamaiti. But on the other hand, when it comes to the Hedyotis, I did hear a reason why you have another Hedyot in Jewish history who on the face of it should have been included, but he's not. Namely, Mefnei Manuas Micha. Namely, the question was asked, why is Micha, he of Pesel Micha, why is he not included? He was Choto Machias Rab Moser with his Pesel. And the reason is, because his bread was always available for travelers. In other words, he was a big Machias Orach. The pasuk that says all those who passed by, who went back and forth, went to the Levium, representing Micha. Now, there's actually no such pasuk, and most the Kisviyad and Ein Yaakov, whatever, don't have this. Not necessarily early Ruggles. There's people who are traveling. People are always traveling on one reason or another. There's actually no such pasuk as Kalo Eva Veshav El Alavim, but you do see from the psukim over there that describe the whole story of Pesel Micha. First, you have this Levi over there, the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu, who was learned in Rav Basra, is wandering around, and Micha takes him in. Later on, you have people from Shevet Dan are traveling to find themselves a new area in Eretz Yisrael to conquer, and they also, and then Micha takes them also in, and it's Machnas Orach. What? So therefore, Achnas Hazarchim saved him from being listed. So Achnas Hazarchim saved him from being listed in this list over here. So again, you have two different explanations. One is Taka saved him from losing his place in Olam Haba. The other explanation, which is more what the Yad Ramah says, fine, he did lose his place in Olam Haba, but it saved him from having to be listed publicly with everybody else.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, discussing it tomorrow with the
Mishnah. Yeah, but at least it's not in the Mishnah.
I think Yehoyakim has the David's name in it, no?
David, yeah. Indeed. Yehoyakim, yeah. David should will lift up. Yeah. Okay. Speaking of Micha, let's talk about him a little bit. A pasuk says, "Va'ova b'yom Sarah," and Sarah passes through the sea. "V'hika b'yam galim," and strikes the waves in the sea. So what does that mean? Amar Rabbi Yechonon zeh pislei shel Micha. The Sarah that we're talking about over here that went through the yam is talking about Pesel Micha. So Rashi gives two explanations. One is we're not talking about the actual Pesel yet. we're talking about. We know the famous thing that Moshe, before they left, before the Yidden left Mitzrayim, he had to find Yosef's coffin. Yosef's coffin is hidden at the bottom of the Nile over there. So he writes the name of Hashem. He writes the name of Hashem on a piece of something, a piece of gold, I think it was, or whatever, and threw it into the water, and then the coffin floated up. Micha got a hold of that thing. Later on, when it came to making the egel, he put it in to the mix over there, and that's how the egel.
It was
a piece of gold, I think, or something, whatever. But he wrote a name of Hashem on it to use to get Yosef's coffin out of it. But Micha found that, and later on, when it came to the egel, he used it to make the egel appear more alive, maybe even speak. We'll talk about it later on. Kuvzayin, whatever. Hashem's name, yeah. So other Midrashim say actually that it said on a Alishur, come out Shur, because Yosef is compared to a Shur in the brachas at the end of the Torah. So therefore, this is why it became an eagle. An eagle is a baby Shur. Anyway, the point is that's one explanation. When we say that Pesel Micha went through, we don't mean the actual Pesel Micha. We mean this thing that Micha later on used to help make the eagle. Or the
piece of gold came from...
It came from Moshe, fine, but then Micha got a hold of it.
How did he get a hold of it?
I don't know, that's a good question. He dived down into the Nile and got it. I don't know. Yeah. Or another...
Okay. If someone wants to do it,
another... Okay. Yeah. Okay. Another explanation, Rashi says, what do we mean? Is the actual pestle that the actual pestle micha, the actual statue itself, they were carrying along when they crossed the Yam Suf. Tanya of Nosanim, I mean, Gorov Lashilo Gimel Milin, from Gorov, which is where Micha lived, that's the name of a town, from there to Shilo, where Mishkan Shilo was standing, the distance is 3 mil, which is about 2 miles. V'hoya, yeah, fairly close, a mile and a half, 2 miles or so. V'hoya, Ashan Hamarocha V'Ashan Pesel Micha Mis'arvin Zebezet. So the smoke from the Mizbeach and the smoke from Lahavdo, from Micha's Pesel, are intermingling. Dikshu Malach HaSharot L'Deichvei. So the Malach HaSharot wanted to push away Micha, get him out of here. Or, Marsha says, they wanted to push away the smoke, that the smoke at least shouldn't intermingle. Amar Lahen HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the Eibishter tells the Malachim, Hanmichu Loi, Shepiti Metzuya Lo Eved Rachim, leave him alone, because as we just said, he was a big Machnes Orach, and that, of course, protects him. It's because of that, because of Pesel Micha, that the Jewish people were punished by Pelegish Begiva. Namely, so you have Pesel Micha, it's standing over there, it's described in Perek Yud Zayin and Yud Ches of Shoftim. We don't ever find that the Jewish people made any protest against it, not when it was in Micha's house, and not afterwards when Shevet Don took it and brought it to their place in the north of Eretz Yisrael. And right after that, you have the last three Perekim of Shoftim. You test Chof Chafalef, tell the whole story of Pesel, of Pelegish Begiva, where the Jewish people were roused to action, and they all went out to war against Binyamin, but in the first stages of the war, 40,000 soldiers from the other Shvatim, aside from Binyamin, were killed the first two times. 22,000 one day, 18,000 the next day, before finally, on the third day, they finally beat Binyamin. So why were they punished? Or they were thought going for a righteous cause. The people, there's been this terrible thing done in Giva, which is reminiscent of when this week's parasha, when the Anshei Sdoim are coming to Lloyd's house and demanding that the Malachim be sent out of there. This is a similar kind of thing. So why are they punished? Why did 40,000 Jews have to get killed? I mean, they were punished because of that. Because the Eibishter said, "B'chvodi lo mechisim, you're not being moicha on my covered about the whole matter of Pesel Micha. Al kvodish a boss of a dumb mechisim, but you're being moicha when it comes to the covered of a boss of a dumb. So there, your priorities are skewed. But and actually, Marashal says that's the vote because he was such a machnes orach. Therefore, people figured he must be Micha, must be a good guy. We shouldn't go out against him. But that was wrong.
The
Eibishter is saying that the malachim leave him alone. Still means that down here on earth, the Jewish people are still responsible for taking care of it.
Of who?
Micha? Why would they be scared of him? Adrabah, the Shevet Don went and stole the idol from him and went, and then when Micha started raising a whole ruckus about it, they told him, you better be quiet, otherwise we'll kill you. So they would have had no problem attacking him when he had the statue by him, but evidently they didn't care. Further on this connection about the importance of achnasas arachim and the importance of giving somebody food.
Is achnasas arachim even greater than supporting tzaddikim? It was a shame. Why is it a bit of a shame? It was a shame that to bring up the name of Yisrael.
No. Not a way of shame as in the name of Hashem. No, name of Hashem that was written on there, that Moshe wrote on this piece of gold to bring Yosef's coffin up. Now, because Micha used it later on for the eagle.
Oh,
he used it to make the eagle to make the eagle move and then speak and whatever, and make the Jewish people misled into thinking that's a real that's the real thing. Yeah, yeah. So in that sense, it can be called a pet. Yeah. You're saying is Achnas Tzarichim is greater than what?
Than supporting tzaddikim.
What does one have to do with the other? We weren't talking about supporting tzaddikim. We're talking.
We talked about
supporting tzaddikim in a different context. We said that Achav supported Tamar Chacham. Fine, that's a different matter. If you were talking about in general giving food to a person, eating that you give food to Orchim, very appropriate to this week's parasha, is a great thing. Because of the lack of doing that, two families, two nations, were prevented from joining into the Jewish people. As the pasuk says, why are men from Ammon and Moab also to intermarry into the Jewish people? Because they didn't greet you on the way with food and drink. And therefore, they're not allowed to be Baba Kahal. So we see, because of a lack of giving food and drink, therefore they were prevented.
Well, even if they did,
Even
if they did, Avodah Zarah.
Yes.
What does that mean? Because they didn't give them
life. Right. The point is, in other words, most other nations in the world, fine, they're Oved Avodah Zarah, but they become Gerim and they can intermarry right away to the Jewish people. Ammon and Moab, never. The men, at least. Why not? Because Gdol Legimah, yeah. Rabbi Yechanan did say, Rabbi Yechanan himself, not just in the name of Rabbi Yechanan Kisma, goes further. He says, you see a lot of things about Legima. Merachekas Zakravim, it distances people who otherwise would have been close. Umakarevas Zarachokim, it brings close to the Jewish people who otherwise would have been far. Umalemas Ayimin Roshayim, it causes the Ebishter Kaviyachal to overlook the evil of the Roshayim, as I said by Micha. It causes that the Shechina can rest on somebody who is a Navi of Baal, a false Navi. He can get Nevuah as a result of giving food to somebody. And we're going to give examples for each one of these things from Sukkot. The Shigigasa Elazadon, and do it by mistake, not giving somebody, failing to give somebody food and drink when they need it, even though it's a mistake, it was just an oversight, that's considered equivalent to having done it on purpose. It's punished very severely. So where do we see each of these things? We just said that Ammon and Moab were relatives of the Jewish people. They're descended from Lot, after all. But because of a lack of legima, because of a lack of giving food and drink to the Jewish people, therefore they were excluded from the Jewish people.
Legima
comes from the bogam, means the drink. It's from here, yeah. Right. Yeah. But this is, first of all, lechem over here doesn't have to be bread that they bake privately at home. It could be pasta palter. First of all, one second. Pasta strola is a din d'rabban. It's a din d'rabban. It may not have been, the gzeda may not have been made yet then. But even if it was, even if pasta akum existed, fine, the Ammon and Moab don't necessarily know that. They should still come out with bread. We can't eat their bread? Okay, we can't eat their bread. But at least you should come over it. But I mean, but besides that, anyway, even wine of goyim wasn't yet also. Even wine of goyim wasn't yet also, as we're going to learn later on in the whole thing about Bilam. They only offered it after the whole story with Benos Moav. So past Akum for sure probably wasn't also yet. Okay, we see that giving food brings close those who otherwise would be far. We learn that from Yisrael. Namely, so Rashi says actually that we're not talking about, when we say krovim and rechokim, we don't necessarily mean closer relatives and further away relatives. Yisrael, who is descended from Ketura, is actually more closely related to the Jewish people than Ammon and Moab. So Rashi says it means geographically. Ammon and Moab are near Eretz Yisrael, Midian is further away. But we see that Yisrael, so Midian, was brought close to the Jewish people in the schus of giving food and drink. We see that in Yisrael. In the schusav that Yisrael told his daughters, that guy who saved you by the well, go offer him, call him over here, let him eat bread with us. In that schusav, in the schusav of that, his children, his descendants, was zoicha to sit on the Sanhedrin in the Lishkas HaGadis. Moshe Rabbeinu, indeed, yeah. Now we're gonna have later on on Kufvav, the Gemara says that Yisrael was zeicher to that for a different reason, because he didn't want to go along with Paro's plans for what he wanted to do to the Jewish people. So Marashah talks about you needed two stages over here. You needed the mitzvah over here that was saying that he offered Moshe bread, that he offered a stranger who he didn't even know, that he offered him food. That was Zoycha, that now his children are now able to be lovei b'chol. They're now able to freely intermarry into the Jewish people after they convert. Then, as a result of his earlier thing that he had done by not going along with Kari's plan, that he protested against it, for that he got that they're able to sit in Lushkas HaGadis. So over here, the Gemara is mentioning the first stage of it. If they weren't miyuchasim in Yisrael, if they weren't miyuchasim, if they were also lavei b'chol, even no matter how great Talmid Chachamim were, they wouldn't be able to sit in the Sanhedrin.
But who was in the Sanhedrin?
Yisrael's descendant. Yisrael's descendant. I don't know their names, but they're Yisrael's descendants. Shenema, as the pasuk says, u'mishpachos sofrim yosh v'yavetz. Among the families of Sofrim, meaning Talmid Chachamim, who sat with Yavetz. Yavetz was a great Talmid Chacham of that time. He's a Osni Oban Knaz, is another name of him. Tir Osim, Shim Osim Suchosim. These are nicknames for the family. Tir Osim means the ones by the gate, because the Sanhedrin usually sat by the gate of a city. Shim Osim, the ones who listened to the tzivui of their father. Rashi brings a story over here from Sefer Yirmiyah in that connection. Suchosim, where they lived in sukkahs, because their ancestor Yonadab ben Rechav told them that they should live in temporary, they should live in tents rather than in permanent houses. Not the Sanhedrin. These descendants of Yisrael. There was a guy in a later time called Yonadav ben Rechav, one of the descendants of Yisrael. He told his descendants, in order that this way they should always remember that we're only here temporarily in the world, whatever. He told them they should never drink wine, they should never live in permanent houses, and a few other things. And then
this is the story.
In Sefer Yirmiyah afterwards, where the Eved tells Yirmiyah, bring some of these guys from this family into a room in the Beis Mikdash, offer them wine, and see what they'll say. And they say, and they answer, we can't drink the wine because our father told us not to. And then the Abishah tells Yirmiyah, look at this. So these guys are listening to a boss of a dumb, their ancestor, Yonadab ben Rechav. How come the Jewish people collectively are not listening to me, the Abishah? But the Abishah ends up saying, as a result, the reward for these people, the descendants of Yonadab, that they faithfully followed what their ancestor said, because of that, lo yikoris ish Yonadab ben Rechav omen lefanei kol hayomim, there will never be cut off. There'll always be somebody from Yonadab ben Rechav's family that will be standing before me, serving the Eivishter in some capacity among the Jewish people throughout all generations.
So we don't know who he is.
So we don't know here. We don't know, but yeah, there's somebody there. So anyway, getting back to the pasuk we were quoting, Hemer HaKenim HaBoy Mechamas Avi Beis Rechav. They are the Kenim. Keni is one of the names of Yisrael, as we know, who came from Hamas, the father of the house of Rechav. This is the Yonadav ben Rechav that we just said. So therefore we see, in other words, that this Mishpachai Sofrim are descendants of Yisrael, and they are and they were members of the Sanhedrin, because that's what Tir Osim means. They sat by the gate. They were members of the Sanhedrin who sit at the gate. Uchtivah, so we see that the Kenim are descended from Yisrael, because Uchtivah, B'nei Keni Chosid Moshe, Olam Me'ir Atzmorim, that's B'nei Yehuda, the descendants of the sons of Keni, the father-in-law of Moshe, so we see that Keni is Yisrael, went up from Irat Tzmorim, from the city of palms, which means from palm trees, which means Yericho, at Bnei Yehuda. They went to Bnei Yehuda, Midbar Yehuda. They went to the desert of Yehuda, Asher B'Negev Arad, that's in the south of Arad, in the desert part, in the Negev, in Yehuda. Vayelach Vayeshev Ezom, and they went and sat together with the people. The Gemara, by the way, I think it's Gemara. The Gemara tells us details about this. What happened was, at that time, there was a Sneoban Knaz, also known as Yavit, who was the great Talmud Chacham of that generation, but he didn't have Talmidim. He's living in the south of Eretz Yisrael. He's living there in the Negev, in a dry area, and nobody's interested in traveling out over there to learn by him. He was known to be a Talmud Chacham, but nobody was willing, when he traveled around, people would find, when they would find out, but nobody was willing to travel to Arad to learn with him. Meanwhile, you had these descendants of Yisrael who are living in the area near Yericho, a really fertile area, the most fertile area of Eretz Yisrael. They wanted to learn Torah. So they chose to leave that area and go to the Negev Arad, to the south over there, to learn by Osni Oban Knaz, and that also helped that they became the great members of the Sanhedrin.
Yericho was very fertile.
Yericho was very fertile.
It's and not fertile now, is it?
I don't know. I've never been to Yericho itself. Unfortunately, it's occupied by the Palestinians. But yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It is.
You're right.
Mechamas. They came from Hamas, didn't they?
No,
they're not Hamas. Hamas. Come on. Okay.
So therefore we see
that giving food to somebody, again, it's merachet kroivim, because we see Ammon and Moab by right should have been able to intermarry with the Jewish people, but they were prevented because they didn't give food to the Jewish people. Yisrael, on the other hand, who was geographically further away, biologically he was closer, at least if we say he was, because he was from Bnei Keturah, he was from Midian. Yeah, but there are other Mephoshim who argue otherwise, that maybe Yisrael is actually, just that we talked about earlier in the Perek, that Yisrael may have been one of the descendants of Ham, in which case he is further from whatever. And the point is, he was brought closer as a result of giving food to Moshe. Next, we said, we see Rabbi Yechanan said that giving food to somebody causes the Eibishter to overlook the evil deeds of Rishayim. We see that from Micha, because we just said that the Eibishter was willing to let Micha slide because he was a machnas.
You have to actually give the food, or you can get money from that food.
The pastors were talking about actual food, but I don't know. Umashra Shechina al Navi Abal, where do we see that giving food can cause that the Shechina can rest on a Navi Abal, a false Navi? We see that Mechavera Shel Idai HaNavi. We see that from the colleague of Idai HaNavi. So we had part of the story at the end of the previous parak. Briefly, what it is the Eivishter sends a Navi. The prophet actually doesn't name him. We have the Kabbalah that his name was Idai. The Eivishter sends a Navi to Yeravam to warn him that it was as a result of his Egle Hazav and his Avodah Zarah and whatever else he's doing wrong over there, that therefore eventually he says one day there's going to be a king named Yeshayahu who's going to take all the bones of the people who worship at these various bummets and whatever, is going to burn them over here, meaning including Yeravam himself. The upshot of it is that, hundreds of years later, it happened. Anyway, Yeravam continues doing what he did. Idai was given instructions by the Eibishter. He's not to eat or drink anything over there on his mission. He's supposed to go to Beisel, give this warning to Yeravam, and go back home by a different route, not even by the same route that he came. That's what the Eibishter told him. So what happens now? There's a Navi to the deposit, because there's a Navi Zaken living in Beisel over there, an old Navi, a false Navi, although actually there is the Rashba actually wants to say, based on our Gemara, that he may have been originally a true Navi and then went bad, just like we had Hanani ben Azur in the previous Perek. Whatever it is, at this point in history, he's a false Navi. He wants to be Machnes Orach Idai, so he falsely claims to him that the Eibishter gave me a Nevuah that you should come and eat by me. And we learned at the end of the previous parak, this is an example, what happened, Idai bought the line and went and ate by him. And we learned in the previous parak that a Navi is over on the Nevuah that he himself was given, is Chayav Misa B'dei Shemayim. So the pasuk says, Vayhi Heim Yoshim Al HaShulchan, as they're sitting over there eating at the table, Vayhi Dvar Hashem Al HaNavi Asher HaShivoi, then the word of Hashem came to the Navi who brought him back, meaning the false Navi. All of a sudden, this false Navi gets a true Nevuah from the Eidishter, that Idai is going to be killed by a lion. Which taka happened. So therefore we see that being Machnes Orach brings about that a Navi Abal all of a sudden gets a true Nevuah from the Eibishter.
He was forgiven with all the...
Who, Idai?
No.
No, it's Misa itself. So you're asking the false Navi?
Yeah.
The false Navi, so actually it's interesting. I don't know, Bepashas, I'm sure he got what he needed to in the next world, but actually it's interesting, later on when it came, when Yeshayahu, later on at the end of Malachim, when it tells how the attack of Yeshayahu went and was digging up all these graves and burning the bones of all these Oved Avodah Zarah, it says, he says, Mohatziyun Allah, he says, what's this particular grave that I noticed? And Rashi says on the Pasuk, based on a Medrash, that what it is he saw one spot, because what happened was, so I forgot to mention, so after Idai was killed by the lion, this Navi Sheker hears about it. He brings Edo's body back to Beisel and has it buried in his family plot. And he tells his children, when I die, I want you to bury him next to me. Because this Nevuah that he said is actually going to come true hundreds of years from now. All the bones of the Oved Avodah Zarah are going to be dug up and burnt, and I don't want that to happen to me. Bury me next to the Tzaddik, and that way his host will protect me. So now, hundreds of years later, when Yeshayahu comes along, he notices a grave. Rashi says on the pasuk over there, one side of it is weeds and thorns and disgusting things growing out from it. The other side is beautiful flowers and all. What's going on? And they tell him, because there's a tzaddik and a rasha buried next to each other here. The tzaddik Idai and the rasha, the Navi Sheker. So Yoshio says, in that case, leave it alone. I don't want anybody to touch the bones of the Navi Sheker, because you may end up also interfering with the Navi Emes, with Idai. And therefore, Taka works.
It sounds like a Shmuel Moshe story, when he's visiting the Misnagdim and he...
Why did he get killed for the line? Because he was over on his own Nevuah. The Eibishter told him, don't eat and drink in this place, and he ate and drank in this place.
Because he would have heard the
Nevuah
coming.
He would have heard it, exactly. If it was a true Nevuah, we learned at the end of the previous Perek, there's sort of like the Navi channel or the Navi WhatsApp group or whatever. When one Navi is told something, all the other Navim are aware of it, and in this case, Idai wasn't aware of it, so he should have realized right away that's a false Nevuah. And v'shigagotha oilazod, and where do we see the last thing that we said, that we said that failing to give somebody food, even v'shigig, is considered as bad as doing it purposely.
Da'amar of Yehoda
Amarav. Well, okay, so, Here's an example. Suppose that Yohonasan, the son of Shaul, had lent David two loaves of bread. So we have the story at Bakhtarda Mochachodesh that David is hiding out in the field, and Yohonasan comes to him a couple of days later and gives him a signal using the arrows over there that Shaul is out to get you. You better run. So what happens then? The pasuk continues. So Yohonasan goes back home to the city, and David goes off to run away. Next thing that happens is David comes to Nov Ir HaKohanim. He's starving. He's had nothing to eat for the last couple of days. And therefore, he actually goes to the Kohen Gadol and asks him, do you have anything to eat? And the Kohen Gadol tells him, all we have is lechem upon him. And David says, it's okay. It's Bikurach Nefesh, etc. And then what happens from there? Yeah, lahalacha. So what? And we discussed it earlier in the Perek, that Doyeg HaDoymi, David's famous enemy, was there at the time. And he used that as an excuse to claim that Achimelech and all the Kohanim are conspiring with David against Shaul. And the upshot, which wasn't true, and the upshot is that Shaul ordered them all to be killed. So it all started from the fact that Yohonasan forgot to give David any food. So that's what Ilmole Hilvol Yonasan and David Shtei Kikris Lachem. If Yonasan had lent David two loaves of bread, whatever, lent him, given him, whatever. The point is, even if he said, oh, you need to pay it back later, but whatever. Lo neregu Novi Rakonim. Novi Rakonim never would have been wiped out. V'lo nitra Doegadomi. Doegadomi wouldn't have been kicked out and lost his place in Elam HaBa. V'lo nereg Shol, Shlosh is Bonav, and Shol and his three sons wouldn't have been killed in battle. All of that were outgrowths of this thing, that Novi Rakonim, all of this was outgrowths of the fact that Yonasan forgot to give David food. And some of the Mephoshim say, by the way, Yonasan maybe had a valid reason for it. He figured if he takes along food, and doch after all, I mean, it looks like, supposedly, he's only going out to the field to practice archery. What's he doing taking along food? And could look suspicious. Nevertheless, he shouldn't. Because what's he taking a big amount of food for an outing, for an hour or two to practice archery? Nevertheless, though, he should have found some way of doing it, realizing that David's been hiding out there for a couple of days. And because of that.
The picnic wasn't invented yet.
What?
The picnic wasn't invented.
And therefore, because of that, that's what we're saying, Shigrasa Oila Zodin, that therefore it's considered as if Yonasan purposely didn't give it to him yet. One second, Rabbi Yaakov, what? Okay, so fine. If he had accompanied him and then given him on the way two loaves of bread, yeah. What were you going to say?
Didn't Yonasan
should
die? He wasn't a follower. Good to him.
Yeah, Yonasan was very good to him. Fine. But it's not that we're not saying that David held it against Yonasan. The Evishta held it against Yonasan.
But why he didn't want to give it to
him? And not that he didn't want to. Again, maybe he figured it's too dangerous or whatever. For him it was Shagig. He didn't have to. He didn't have to, but it's important to give David food.
I think that he thought they know that I've given David some bread.
No. Already, Yonasan had gone over there in front of Shaul and defended David. Shaul had almost taken his spear and was ready to kill Yonasan, except Yonasan got out of there. So no, Yonasan had already put his life on the line for David. It's not that he's afraid all of a sudden to put his life on the line. He forgot, it seems. He forgot or whatever he figured it is.
These kids believe in the voice of God.
Yes.
What was their logic?
It's hard to know, but I guess
if somebody don't believe in voice, they can do it. So I don't believe in nothing.
Okay. I'll tell you though. I mentioned the other day of a mimer of the Rebbe, Yom Ashtei Osa Yom, that talks about the idea. It's also there's a similar idea brought in Kuntra Samayan, for example, that a person can actually, when it comes to gashmius of this world, sometimes a person can get more through klipa than through other kurs, because klipa doesn't discriminate. Like klipa is willing to give out regardless whether you're worthy of it or not. Whereas the Eivishta, in principle, you only get good from the Eivishta if you deserve it. So therefore, they may have felt that it's better to be machas the Eivishta and get hashpah from the klipa rather than.
Well, he has so much good. He has everything he wanted. All these kings have so much what they want. That
may have been an idea. I don't know.
The greater you are, the bigger you are.
This is also true, yeah. Right.